Good afternoon. You are dialed into Citizens Finance and Investment Committee meeting, scheduled to convene immediately following the Audit Committee meeting. We're going to convene with roll call. Welcome to our July 12th Finance and Investment Committee meeting. This is a publicly noticed meeting in the Florida Administrative Register. This meeting is recorded and transcribed minutes available on our website. For those attending today's session through the public link, you are automatically in listen-only mode. Panelists, thank you for identifying yourself prior to addressing the committee. Due to Governor Lazaro Fields' resignation from Citizens Board, Board Chair Baruff has stepped in to chair this committee. Chairman Baruff, we have no speaker requests for today's meeting. May I proceed with roll call?
Please do. Thank you.
Chairman Baruff.
Here.
Governor Butts.
Here.
Governor Dunbar. Governor Dunbar. Chairman, Governor Dunbar is on the line. We will work on getting his line open. Governor Knight.
Present.
Chairman, you have a quorum.
Thank you. And who is up first? Approval of prior meetings minutes. Somebody make me a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Minutes are adopted. Thank you. And you're on.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Governors. For the record, my name is Kapil Bhatia. I work for Raymond James & Associates, and we are your financial advisor. I'll briefly start with the market update and finish with where the risk transfer markets are and how bad they are. As we are all seeing prices, that inflation has increased significantly over the last 6 months and is expected to continue until the end of 2022, even though employment picture is still stable. The inflation initially started because of demand surge in goods with global supply constraints due to COVID lockdowns and with significant fiscal stimulus measures in the total amount of $5.7 trillion, or approximately 24% of our GDP, resulting in unprecedented demand surge. Since February of 2022, inflation has gotten worse with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which has significantly increased, as we can all see in the energy and food prices, as well as commodity prices. And now inflation is shifting from goods to services as labor shortage continues with demand surge moving from goods to services. To manage inflation so far in 2022, the Fed has increased its Fed fund target rate three times by a total of 1.5% to the current target range of 1.5 to 1.75% because we started at 0 to 25 basis point. This includes the most recent 75 basis point increase on June 15th, or the largest since 1994. The Fed has also communicated that it plans to raise rates expeditiously to control inflation. We expect Fed to increase rate at least three more times by 1.25% this year, at least over the next three meetings, before taking its foot off the pedal and reaching it to 2.75 to 3 by end of 2022. We also expect inflation to come down by the first quarter of 2023, and therefore the interest rate may not increase at the current projected pace. However, continuation of war and energy crisis, as well as additional COVID lockdowns, may further exacerbate the supply chain problems and may lead to continued inflation next year. Global markets are similar to where we are because global central banks are following the U.S. Federal Reserve and cutting the rates even beyond what was needed, as well as following the U.S. fiscal policy. And now the whole world is trying to play catch-up to manage inflation. Again, part of this inflation is unanticipated Russian invasion, which was not on anybody's radar, at least until February of this year. Interest rates have responded to Fed funds rate increases. As I talked about briefly earlier, over the last 6 months, or over the last 1 year, 1 year U.S. Treasury rate has increased from 7 basis points to almost 3%. That's an increase of almost 293 basis points. 2 year has increased from 20 basis point to 3.05, and 10 year has increased from 1.3 to 3%. So effectively, yield curve is flat because everybody is expecting some kind of recession. The result of higher interest rate and lower equity prices will lead to higher unemployment rate and to economic slowdown and maybe even a mild recession over the next 12 months. Not just a technical recession, which is the definition of recession, two negative quarters of GDP, however, more of an economic recession, which means a little deeper in unemployment as well as more inflation to continue. And we have seen that the spread between 2 and 10 year is negative 4 basis points. That means the yield curve is inverted and everybody is expecting inflation and recession. And if everybody is expecting a recession, that usually leads to a recession. However, at the same time, we believe the pendulum on the interest rates has swung too far. And as always, the markets have overreacted and overcorrected. We expect U.S. Treasury rates to come down as the economy slows down for some of the following reasons. Almost all of the fiscal stimuli in the total amount of $5.7 trillion, which I mentioned, is spent and is mostly already reflected in the growth numbers. Economy is going to slow down with increase in interest rates and equity market declines. Housing sector is slowing down with mortgage rates have increased, especially the new construction. Global macro conditions will improve as the world adjusts to the geopolitical crisis. Increase in energy prices will eventually lead to lower demand. Savings rates is down significantly, and that should reduce consumer demand and, of course, increases in prices due to inflation. And base effect, as higher prices become part of the base prices, the rate of change will slow down. That means inflation will come down. And lastly, we have already seen the first quarter GDP was negative, and we expect 2022 GDP to be neutral to almost negative or briefly negative. All of this has also impacted our investment portfolio as interest rates have significantly increased, and that has resulted in negative mark-to-market value in our portfolio. But mark-to-market negative values are non-economic and non-cash as these negative values pull to par as the securities mature. However, our income return is stable, and rising interest rates are economically beneficial as they lead to higher interest income, and we will get the benefit of increasing rates by investing our maturities at a higher rate, as well as the additional premiums which we are generating this year at a higher interest rate. We have approximately $2 billion maturing over the next 12 months, an additional $900 million maturing over the next, beyond the 12 months, but before, over the next 24 months. I'll stop here and happy to answer any questions, if there are any, before moving on to the risk transfer markets.
Questions? I have a question.
Yes, sir.
You said that you saw in unemployment going up. Do you calculate that even with the reduction in the workforce?
The reduction in the workforce, actually the participation in the workforce went down significantly in March of 2020. We have seen the participation coming back up. As the savings are depleting and more people are thinking of coming back, so we think the participation rate going up. So that means unemployment rate will go up even with the participation rates going up. So that will be a double the impact on the unemployment.
The number that they disclosed in May where the participation rate was going down again was an anomaly?
It was up by 0.1 basis point. We expect to be up by another 1% over the next 6 months as the savings run out and all of the fiscal stimulus and the free money which U.S. government gave runs out. Those people will have to come back to the job. So we expect participation rate to come down by 1 to 1.5% over the next 6 to 12 months.
They've already started default on car payments.
Yes.
When do you see defaults in other debt-related instruments?
It's probably going to start with the credit cards after the used cars. And the credit card, as the savings rates are going down, we expect credit card receivables to start increasing. And you can see in some of those numbers, there was a downgrade of American Express this morning. It's starting already on the credit card, so we expect that, but probably not on the mortgage because interest rates are still low, relatively speaking, and the home equities have built up over the last couple of years. So it's not going to be as severe as historically has been because there are still plenty of jobs available based on, but just people have to come back and look for work.
You think the recession is already priced into the markets?
Recession is priced into the market. I mean, the equity markets usually in the recession goes down to by 30%, and we have already seen a drawdown of 25%. Yield curve being flat. So whether it's going to be a mild or moderate or severe recession is not priced in, but the mild recession is already priced in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to the risk transfer market, reinsurance markets are in flux and have significantly reduced capacity and also increased prices. So far this year, The risk transfer rates are approximately up 10 to 15% globally. However, in Florida, they are up 30 to 50%. Some of the factors for this increase in reinsurance rates globally are similar to what we're talking about from a global macro perspective. As the world is in semi-permanent volatile stage and looking for further direction with multiple unknown variables from inflation to global monetary policy and tightening and interest rates going up, and some of the major factors for the dislocation are 5-year global insured losses over the last 5 years have been over half a trillion. And that is now reflecting in the markets as the capital have evaporated. The continuation of COVID crisis and associated business interruption losses. Russia's invasion of Ukraine and associated aviation and other significant losses totaling almost $2 to $3 billion, still to be known, the exact number. Significant mark-to-market losses in reinsurers' investment portfolio as a result of higher interest rates as well as lower equity prices, resulting in mark-to-market unrealized losses, and that has reduced the capacity what reinsurers can write for the risk. And lastly, trapped capital from prior events, especially from recent hurricane and large number of COVID-related claims. And of course, we know all about Florida market has its own problems stemming from litigation, continued adverse loss development and credit quality concern of primary insurers, as some insurers, as we know, have gone into receivership. While the legislation has passed in the special session, it's a step in the right direction. However, the long-term results remains to be seen, and it's not just flipping a switch. It takes usually a time. And more importantly, it will depend on the amount of events or losses this season. If there are losses, we expect the reinsurance market to take longer to recover. With that, I'll stop here, and Jennifer will go through how our reinsurance resulted and what exactly the markets did to our program. But happy to answer any questions.
Questions? None? Thank you.
Thank you.
You ready for the update? Reinsurance.
Why don't we get to the short version? How much did we? How much did we budget? How much did we spend? And how exposed are we?
Okay, we budgeted $400 million. We were trying to place $4.7 billion. We ended up with $2.5 million, costing about $215 million. The overall rate online was 8.45. It's 8.45 is the net. The gross was 8.96. We did come in.
We just care about what it costs us net.
Yep.
I don't know how we get there.
Then we came in lower than we discussed. So,
Ms. Montero, do you have for this board to look at how exposed are we based on a
yes
bet?
Can we put the layer charts up, please? There, thank you. Okay, so this is the coastal account, and for the coastal account, we transferred approximately $1.565 billion to the global market. The weighted average for that was 8.54 on gross. Net, it was 7.93. And the premium for that was $124.2 million. And we are exposing 89% of the surplus is being exposed in the coastal account, okay, which comes out to about $2.788 billion.
Okay, so we don't go underneath our reserves in that scenario.
Correct. We have $338 million in surplus that would be above that line.
So does everybody get that? Okay, let's go to the next.
The next slide? Okay, on the next slide, on the personal lines account, we transferred $942 million to the global market in the personal lines account with a weighted average gross rate on line of 9.65. Net is 9.31% for a total net premium of $87.7 million. And we are exposing 100% of our surplus in the personal lines account, which comes out to $1.718 billion with zero surplus above the line. So we have a Citizens policyholder surcharge of $450 million, which is the 15% per account. And then we have the $390 million emergency assessment after that. And the first one kicks in at the 1 in 62. Citizens policyholder surcharge goes from the 1 in 62 year to the 1 in 68. And then once that's exhausted, the emergency assessment will kick in from the 1 to 8 to a 1 to 82. That's the 390, which is a 10% assessment. And then above that was the layer that we actually had tried to place reinsurance there. We had both a per occurrence and an aggregate layer. There was no interest in the market for that layer, so it is being
replaced. We're upside down 1.2.
$1.728 billion in total.
In total.
The emergency assessment's $1.278, and the citizens' policy holds $450.
So in the worst-case scenario, well, not the worst, but a high-level worst-case scenario, we're $1.78 billion upside down.
Correct. Now it doesn't kick in.
We've run through our surplus, we've run through our reinsurance, and we're now going to the public for $1.78 billion.
If there's an event that gets us to the 1 in 62,
right.
And for the record, and Brian's here to keep me honest about Hurricane Andrew, was like a 1 in 45-ish?
Yeah.
About a 1 in 45 Hurricane Andrew was.
Right.
So it has to be a pretty big event, but the exposure's there.
All right. Anybody have any questions? That was easy, huh?
Okay. That's all you want to know?
That's all I want to know. We saved $185 million that goes into reserves. But that's calculated in your equation in a hurricane event, correct?
Correct.
So we eat that, too. So everybody cross their fingers for about 90 days, and we'll be okay.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, a little bit more than 90 days.
And now 110 days. Okay, be picky. By November 1st, we're out of the woods. Next.
Okay, next is the investment portfolio update. And if we could put that on the screen, that would be great too.
Under what tab is that?
It's behind tab 3, and then it's the tab that says investment portfolio.
Where's where we make that extra $50 million that we've been talking about?
That's the deal you made with Coppola.
That's right. Where's the money? Show me the money.
We still have 175 days. That's truly, we have more than 6 months left. 5 months.
Okay.
I just mentioned with the increasing interest rate, we expect our interest income to increase. So we're counting on the last 5.5 months to get to that point.
All right.
Okay, so on slide one, the total portfolio is $9.29 billion, with approximately $8.3 billion, or 89%, externally managed by our 10 investment managers.
Is that page, where is that?
It's page one behind the tab that's called Citizens Investment Summary.
I've got it.
So the remaining $993 million, or 11%, is internally managed and primarily consists of the operating funds, debt service funds, and debt service reserve funds. The taxable portfolio is $8.84 billion, and the tax-exempt portfolio is $450 million. The portfolio is very conservative and stable, with sufficient liquidity to pay any current claims or potential future claims. The total portfolio average duration is just over 4.08 years. The annualized income return based on our compliance system for the 3 year and 1 year is approximately 1.5% and 1.58% respectively. However, these returns reflect market yields only and exclude any realized gains or losses, accretion of discount and amortization of premium bonds and investment manager fees. The 2019 through 2021 portfolio's annualized net income return as earned and reported in our financial statements is over 2.7% annually. The annual net income return was 2.7% for 2019, 2.96% for 2020, and 2.84% for 2021. These net income returns are after investment manager fees and include net realized gains or losses, as well as accretion and amortization of discount or premium bonds. The 2022 year-end June net income return is 0.98%. Turning to slide two, The Treasury rates have significantly increased over the last 12 months as markets are trying to adjust for expected Fed rate increases over the next 12 months and to the account.
I see that turning.
Excuse me?
Just so that you know, your slides aren't happening. If you want them on the TV, they're not.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Okay.
Sorry. Does everyone have them in the book? Okay.
I think so.
So the Treasury rate have significantly increased over the last 12 months as the markets are trying to adjust to the expected Fed rate increase over the next 12 months and to account for recent inflationary and macroeconomic factors. The yield curve is flat or marginally inverted. Current 2 to 10 year spread is -2 basis points as markets are expecting a recession again due to global macroeconomic factors. And the tax exempt rates have also similarly increased. And turning to slide 3, both the taxable and tax-exempt portfolios have very strong credit quality. Over 73% of the taxable portfolios in money market funds are rated A or higher, and 100% of the tax-exempt portfolio is in money market funds or rated A or higher. And approximately 37% of the total portfolio is in Treasury and agency securities or in money market funds. In the last slide, slide 4, the portfolio income return is stable, and this slide again reflects returns from for 1 through 3 years based on the market yields. And we expect income return to be approximately 2.5% in 2022 as we get the incremental interest income from rising interest rates. The portfolio total return is negative due to the significant increase in interest rates in 2022, but as the portfolio matures over time, the negative mark-to-market value will evaporate. And I'll pause there for any questions.
Nope. I think we're good.
That completes everything we had to present.
Next.
So now we go to the A&U.
I know.
Okay.
Keep going. Do we have to call that meeting, Barbara?
Yes, Chairman, thank you.